Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the second day of the Feast of Tabernacles.
Yes.
What I'm going to speak about today is something that is considered the only constant in the universe, and that is change. There was a man named Heraclitus. He was a pre-Socratic Greek philosopher, and somewhere around 500 BC, he was the one that coined the phrase, change is the only constant in life. Then there was a very popular astronomer named John Dean. And back at the turn of the century in 1911, he coined the phrase, or at least he said, ceaseless change is the only constant thing in nature. Mm-hmm. And there's a life coach of all people, but he's quite renowned. His name is Andrew Campbell Watt. And he said, nothing in the world is static. Nothing remains the same. Everything is in a state of change. Those who long for stability, whereby what is present now will forever be so, are delusional. Such a situation will not and cannot exist. Change is everywhere and at all times. The world and life is dynamic. Everything is in a state of flux. And of course, we have to look at the definition of change and the dictionaries. Merriam-Webster defines change as to undergo substitution, transition or transformation. And the Oxford Dictionary says, to make or become different, an act or a process through which something becomes different, the substitution of one thing for another. Nothing in existence is static, and that is unchanging. Even the very ground that we stand on and the physical universe, although to us it seems like it's unchanging, it is actually constantly changing. And you can ask any physicist, and he'd be very happy to wax eloquent about molecules and quarks and radiation and all sorts of cool things, but he could prove to you physically that everything is, in fact, either changing or deteriorating. And even that's an argument in itself, because when a thing deteriorates, it's actually just the separation of it, and it goes somewhere else. Nothing is actually disappearing. It's really neat. There's a fellow out there by the name of Chuck Missler. He's a PhD in computer something or other, but boy, he's got some really interesting theories on exactly what's going on with the physics of the universe. And the concept of change touches everybody and everything. And it ranges from very small things like changing your mind. And it goes to very big things like the overthrow of government and the altering of galaxies and the unfolding universe. But our understanding of change and how we deal with it all can alter the direction of our lives. And it can make a big difference between surviving and flourishing, between ending up with good memories that increase our happiness. And I was once told that happiness is a series of good memories. I like that one. Mm-hmm. Downside is unhappiness is a series of bad memories. And we have some influence over that. Even more importantly, though, it has a lot to do with our calling and the work God is doing in and through us, individually, and even as our little group. And our spiritual calling is all about change, who we are, what we are, and who we will be when God is finished with us. So what I would like to dig into today is how change impacts our lives, both physically and spiritually, and what we can do about it when we're in the midst of change. And I'd like to cover a few things like the challenges of dealing with change, and on the other side of that coin, how do we go about initiating change in our lives? To give us a few tools to help us when change happens, whether it's good or bad, whether it's wanted or whether it's unwanted, and why it's important to avoid some change and why God says it's imperative to change in other things. So throughout this process, I'll dig into some scriptures, of course, from the Bible to give us a little guidance in making decisions and having observations about all these things. And we'll have a look at a few of the notable examples in the Bible that have been significant moments when changes have occurred. So we as humans are funny critters. No two ways about it when it comes to change. On one hand, we need change. We need change to stay interested. We need change to be motivated in life and, frankly, to stay alive in some cases. But if we have too much change, we need and crave the opposite, no change, or what we see or what we perceive as stability. Without change, we stagnate, we deteriorate, and we become smaller. We have too much change, and we erode. We deteriorate, and we become smaller. We don't like change for the most part. There's a man named James Baldwin. He wrote a book entitled As Much Truth as One Can Bear. He wrote it back in 1962. He said, most of us are about as eager to change as we were to be born and go through our changes in a similar state of shock. Let's face it, here on Earth, the change that happens to us isn't always fun and it isn't always easy. It doesn't mean it isn't good for us. The problem in all of this is that we are emotional beings, and we have hearts and we have minds and we have likes and dislikes, and we have strengths and weaknesses. We have hopes and dreams and fears and a good, generous dose of general screwed upness, especially as we get older. And actually, depending on how much change we have already experienced in our lives, as we get older, we become wiser and we become more insightful and more patient, as well as grumpier, slower to adapt, and frequently limited in how we perceive the unfolding world around us. That's the one I'm personally struggling with. Why, you say? You look so young. I know. This is because senior citizenship is not for the squeamish. It's not for the faint of heart. We're learning that. And I don't look that old, as I say, but come December, I'm going to be starting on my 60th year. That sounds weird saying that out loud. And frankly, I find it exhausting trying to keep up with all the changes going on around us. And don't get me started on how hard it is to keep up with technology. We're on, what, iPhone 8 or something like that? Ask me the difference between iPhone.
The 10 came out to the
table. Oh, yeah, of course. You see? I rest my case. When we're young, we love change. When I was on the road with a band, I loved to travel. People that I would see on the road in other bands, they didn't like to travel. They didn't like the changes. I really liked it a lot. I used to play a little game. I'd wake up in the hotel, and I wouldn't open my eyes, and I'd try to guess what town I was in. Often as not, I got it wrong, but I thought that was really cool. But then we get older. Kim and I, just a couple of years ago, had to do a move all the way from Nanaimo to Parksville. What, 20 miles north on the highway? It was so stressful. We had to buy a new home, sell a home, get a new phone number, find new places to shop. It was really traumatic. So being able to take a step back and apply a few basics to all these changes that we have to go through and have a few principles can make the whole thing a bit more bearable. This little study is going to draw on a combination of scripture that we glean from the Bible, of course, but also some personal life experience. And as I mentioned, having been on the planet for almost 60 years and in God's church for over 35 years, the school of hard knocks in the real world, it teaches you a few things, to say the least, if you're going to open your eyes and want to learn. And it's not good to not pass this stuff off, pass it along. We've all learned some things and we should all share these things, so that's part of what I'll do today. And keep in mind, they're just guidelines, they're just observations. There are no rules in this stuff and there are no absolutes. There's just too many things that overlap, affect each of us as different individuals in different ways. So what are some of the defining characteristics of change? Now, we could spend all day breaking this thing down to the finest details, but we just need something that works for us. One of the biggest things that defines a change is the speed. Change has a time factor to it. There's a temporal nature to it. It's very simple. It's very obvious. Is it a slow change, like increasing our knowledge and our cognitive capacity when we go to university to become a doctor or a lawyer or something like that? And that takes time, and we have to work at it, but we are changed. We are different from when we went in, and we're different from when we come out. And there's quick change, obviously. You trip, you fall, you have a car accident, some things that happen in a moment, and your life is never the same. Change has scope. There are small changes, like the ones that just impact you. You're having lunch, you bite your tongue. Nobody really cares. Nobody really notices. You know. And you have to pay attention next time you're having a meal because now you have to deal with this. So it's something that seems big, but it really just impacts you. Then we have big changes, like you fall out of bed. And when you fall out of bed, you end up hurting your toe, but you can't go golfing for days or even weeks. So that's the definition of a big change. Or cutting your hair. Coco Chanel said, a woman who cuts her hair is about to change her life. Where a change in the world around you impacts you and your family in a larger group like a church group, such as discovering things like the calendar. This is getting even larger. Because you've been using it for years, it tells you when to keep God's holy days, but it's actually flawed, as we found out, and needs to be fixed. Not the calendar itself, but the way we interpret it and the way we apply ourselves to it. And then there's the really big changes like the overthrow of governments and things even larger than that. And now there are things that are under control, under our control, and there are things that are out of our control. Did we cause the change by consciously making a decision to change, or was it a change that was completely out of control, as I mentioned? For example, did we decide to quit our job? Or do we decide to take a promotion to get a better position in our company? Then there's changes that are out of control, such as what the insurance world calls acts of God, floods, earthquakes, forest fires, things like that. And then the things that other people do to us, like selling the company that we've been working for years, or they sell the house out from underneath us that we've been renting for years. And there's physical and mental change, and mental borderlines with spiritual. And again, the toe stubbing or the car accident are obvious examples of physical change. And then on the mental side, deciding to change a bad habit or making a commitment to eat better. And then there's the spiritual side, and these things can include doctrinal changes in our minds, like sorting out, as I mentioned, the new understanding regarding the calendar and the holy days. And finally, and maybe most importantly, is the change good or is the change bad? And this is a bit of a problem because no change is ever completely one or the other. Mostly one or the other, but never not all. And another part of the problem is that we can't always see at the time if what is actually happening to us or around us, even though it's a hard thing to deal with, is actually going to turn out to yield something good as a result. Starts out bad, feels bad, but it has something good. Really good example of this is surgery. You go in for surgery, it's painful and it's scary, but it's necessary and you will come out better for some reason because of it, in most cases because it's fixed something that you needed to have fixed that was really causing a problem in your life. And when you're young, you're not very good at always seeing that even though it's bad now, it's going to be good. Can get very confusing because you take a child to the dentist, there's no way you're going to tell them, don't worry, this is good for you. It'll all work out. You'll be glad you went. And unfortunately, sometimes what we think is really awesome, really good, really fantastic, can turn out to be not so good. One of the best examples for this is winning the lottery. I mean, this seems perfect, right? Who doesn't want to win the lottery? Kim wants to win the lottery. It seems great on the surface, but there are a lot of people who have actually been less happy and even suicidal after winning the lottery. There was an article in Time magazine written by Melissa Chan back in 2016, January, and she said, if you win the $1.5 billion Powerball jackpot, you may not be as lucky as you may think. Many winners befall the so-called curse of the lottery, with some squandering their fortunes and others meeting tragic ends. So many of them wind up unhappy or broke. People have had terrible things happen, said Don McKay, 56, a financial consultant to lottery winners. There's a financial consultant to lottery winners. And the author of Life Lessons from the Lottery. He said that people commit suicide, people run through their money, easy come, easy go. They go through divorce or people die. It's just upheaval that they're not ready for, McNay told Time on Tuesday. It's the curse of the lottery because it made their lives worse instead of improving them. And get this, about 70% of people who suddenly receive a windfall of cash will lose it within a few years, according to the National Endowment for Financial Education. There's a man named Jack Whitaker who was a big lottery winner, and he was already a millionaire, and he won $315 million in a lottery in West Virginia in 2002. He was 55 years old. He was a president of a construction company, and he went broke 4 years later. He lost his daughter and his granddaughter to drug overdoses, and he blamed it on the curse of the Powerball win. And this is him, I quote him, "My granddaughter is dead because of the money. You know, my wife had said she wished that she had torn the ticket up. Well, I wish she had torn the ticket up, too." Whitaker was also robbed of $545,000 while sitting in his car while he was parked outside a strip club 8 months after winning the lottery. Quote, "I just don't like Jack Whitaker. I don't like the hard heart I've got, and I don't like what I've become." Few things in life can cause such a chain reaction of change, like having a ton of cash dumped in our lap when we have no plan, we have no experience on how to deal with large amounts of money. On the other side, sometimes what looks bad can turn out to be good in the end. Maybe there's a few of us that remember a really good TV show back in 1970, 69 to 71, called Hee-Haw, Roy Clark, Archie Campbell, you remember. It was a really good show. But they did this really neat routine where Roy's sitting in the barber chair, Archie's cutting his hair, and they're talking about something that just happened. Archie's uncle just died. Roy says, "Oh, that's bad." And he says, "No, that's good. Left me $50,000. "Oh, that's bad." "No, that's good." And they go on like this till finally they get to the ultimate good news, is that Archie's wife left him and moved back in with his mother. Okay, well, maybe not, but I have one for you. And it's about our calling. And in honor of Hee-Haw, I'll do it with the appropriate accent. Good news. God is calling you. "Well, that's good." "Well, no, that's bad. It means there's going to be a lot of change in your life, like not being able to eat all those pork chops and barbecued shrimp you love so much." "That's bad." "Well, no, that's good. It means you're going to be healthier, you're going to be happier, because you're learning to live God's way." "Well, that's good." "Well, that's not so good, because it also means you got to quit your job, because you can't work Saturdays." "That's bad." "No, it's good. It means you're free from that oppressive boss, the bad pay, and the lousy hours." "Well, that's good." "Well, no, that's bad. That means you have to find a new job." "Well, that's good." "No, that's bad." "Good, because it's the first step to learning to live by faith." "Well, that does sound good." "No, that's bad, because it means there's also going to be lots more trials and changes coming your way." "Oh, that's bad." "No, that's good. With every trial and every change that you go through, you'll get stronger and you'll build that faith." "Well, that sounds good." "Well, no, that's bad, because it's going to take a real long time and it's going to be really hard at times." "That's bad." "No, that's good, because eventually it'll all be over and all them aches and pains will be gone, the trials will be gone and done with, and y'all's going to be a brand spanking shiny new spirit being." "Well, that's good." "Well, yeah, that's good." So overall, things can be mostly good. So what causes change? Change can be motivated by a series of things, one of which is new information, which results in inner conflict. And we find out sometimes as a result that life will never be the same because we now have new information and we can't live the way we used to live before, knowing what we know now. One of the things that happens after we are called and receive the Holy Spirit is we start to see things in a new way from what we did before God showed us that things on earth are not what we thought they are, not what we thought they were, what they seem to be. For example, the previous religion that we subscribe to is actually off base. Or in general, the way you're living now is not in line with how God says to live. About recognizing we must change because God says to change. The previous religion that you were a part of turns out to be off base. The way you're living turns out to be off base. If you would please turn in your Bible to Ephesians 4, verse 17. Verse 17, "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness in their heart, the way we used to think, the way we used to perceive the world, who, being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. But you have not so learned Christ, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus. but you that you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. If that doesn't sum up where we were, what we were thinking, what we were feeling, and who we are going to be, boy, that's the perfect one. Another one, another factor that can really influence and initiate change is bad advice. And that's really a problem in this day and age. And there's a lot of experts out on the internet, to say the least. There's a writer, he's one of my favorite, his name is Aaron Sorkin. You may know him, maybe not by name, but he's written a lot of things, one of which is The West Wing. Very perceptive, very understanding. And he's been quoted a few times. And the concept of his quote is that everybody is entitled to free speech, but not everybody should have a microphone. Mm-hmm. And that's what the internet does. And there's a ton of hogwash information out there regarding how to live your life. And it ends up causing big changes, and usually not for the better. And there's a lot of sayings. Like there was one that Kim sent my way from PragerU, so I'm pronouncing that right. The guy did a little video on saying the nonsense of things like pursuing your passion. Mm-hmm. And the example was a really good one. This young person grew up, they did a little bit of singing, they're convinced they are God's gift to music. And their mom says so. There you go. Okay. So they get in front of the three at American Idol, and it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. They get buzzed. And in a moment, their life changes. They had a plan. They knew where they were going to be. They knew where they were going and who they were, and now it's all over. And it starts off with severe humiliation. It's a mess. And where do you go from here? You have to reinvent yourself, and your mom's not going to be a lot of help. Mm-hmm. You're broken, and you're starting over. Another one is go for it. Mm-hmm. If I never heard that one again, I'd be happy. There's the market up the road, Coombs Market. They used to sell T-shirts. And T-shirt wisdom. You can count on T-shirt wisdom, right? Right, it's good. There was one that says, confidence is what you have when you don't fully understand the situation. Go for it. Yeah. If anyone ever says to you, go for it, there's a motive. Either they're trying to sell something to you to make a buck off you one way or another, or they're trying to sell you a business franchise, or maybe they just want to watch you fall flat on your face, get a kick out of it. Another one is what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And that's, maybe there's something to that. It sounds quite benign, and it's not actually telling us to do anything, but the challenge is we have to overcome a fear. We have to change something in our lives because we're not theoretically satisfied with who we are. And Kim was telling me about, boy, she tells me a lot of stuff. Kim was telling me about this lady who was told she should overcome her fears. And so she was going to go bungee jumping. Yeah. I know, right away. So they tied her onto the thing and they pushed her off the platform, screamed, cried all the way down. She was sure she was going to die, especially when she got to the end of the rope. They pulled her back up and she just curled up in a ball and just cried on the platform. And she was never the same. It was the stupidest thing she ever could have done. Somebody says, what doesn't kill you make you stronger? Well, I'm good. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Another thing that can cause change is other people dealing with something they may have done to us, like marriage. Albert Einstein said, women marry men hoping they will change. Men, like my Einstein. Men marry women hoping they will not. So each is inevitably disappointed. It's the beginning of the desire to change in some areas and the resistance to change in other areas when you get married. Another thing, having children. Yeah, I think that we have a dog. We don't have children, we have a dog. He has changed our life a lot. When that little person comes on the scene, nothing's ever going to be the same. And as a side note, there is a big question out there about when life begins. And there's a lot of debate about it. We won't get too far off in this tangent. But they generally agree on one thing, and that is life begins on Friday at about 5 o'clock. Then there's physical circumstances, such as the loss of a job, a raise in pay, which can be equally traumatic. You get a bunch of new money, but then you have to buy a new home, you have to buy a new car, you have to make decisions you didn't have to make before. And then there's an accident, obviously, physical circumstances, many types of accidents. It can be a car accident, any kind of other accident that causes physical injury, even spraining your wrist or your ankle, or you cut yourself with a kitchen knife, or somebody moves an object that we trip over. And one of the biggest changes is aging. Aging institutes and starts change like nothing else. If there ever was a good news, bad news thing, it's all about aging. We get smarter, but we get slower. We're deteriorating, but we are becoming patient and we are becoming wise. In 2 Corinthians 4, you don't have to turn there, it's just one verse. It says, therefore we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. I know that's spiritual, but it does have a bit of an illustration to what we go through on the physical side. We deteriorate physically, we renew on the inside spiritually. And things like illness, when we get a diagnosis of some sort of an illness, in a moment, our life is never going to be the same. It can turn out to be okay, it can turn out to be not okay, but either way, your life has just changed. And finally, getting up in the morning. We're human. As soon as we put our feet on the floor and we wake up, by drawing breath, by walking and talking, we are going to cause some change to either you, yourself, or to someone else, or to all three. God is the ultimate changer. He changes things physically. He changes things spiritually. If you could turn to Hebrews 11 and verse 8, please. Hebrews 11 and verse 8. And you'll see where I'm going with a few of these, because we know some of these scriptures, at least the concept as it applies to change. But by bringing them all together in kind of a cohesive stream and package, it just helps to clarify these things in our minds. And verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Pretty big change. Not only was it a change spiritually, but also for the nations that were going to be a product of this change. In Daniel 2, verse 21, New King James says, and he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He institutes changes on a national level. And finally, if you could turn to Exodus 12 and verse 40, Exodus 12 and verse 40. Now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. Pretty big change. On the spiritual side, if you could zip over, please, to Ezekiel 36 and verse 26. Ezekiel 36, verse 26 and 27. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will give you the heart. I will put the spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And sometimes we need to be dynamited out of a current life situation. For example, if we're in a big house, we've got a mortgage that's over our head. You've got a career that's maybe not that stable or seems stable, but technology is always changing. That can be desperate, and you can end up not getting out in time before you lose that home, before you've got all sorts of stress that you go with, that goes with that and the trashing of your finances. And sometimes God will get in there, and he'll give you a nudge in a direction that seems painful and wrong. But then you go through it, and you look back and say, wow, we dodged a bullet there. We really needed that to happen. And change is a physical circumstance also. It's our environment that sometimes needs to be changed to produce the growth that God wants in us. There was a Dutch writer, Alexander Heyer, He said, when a flower doesn't bloom, you fix the environment in which it grows, not the flower. And we don't always think in those terms. Sometimes we think God is working with us, he changes us. But no, in order to do that sometimes, and you can tell people, you need to change. Nope. But then you watch your kids grow up, and then you see a situation happen that you never could have created. But because of that change, they do exactly what you tried to tell them to do. So sometimes it definitely is the environment that has to change to initiate the change and the growth within us. Never one, just one thing happens as a result of change. And it never happens to just us. We don't live in a vacuum or in a bubble. I once had a discussion with my brother Buster. He said the laws of the land are simply arbitrary. The ones that man makes are just opinion. They're just somebody coming up with something, and I should be able to do whatever I want in whatever circumstances, because I have wisdom, I have the right, and I can do whatever I want. I said, I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. Let's take speeding, for example. And he said, I should be able to go down a country road where nobody else is. If I want to drive 100 miles an hour, then I should be allowed to. Mm-hmm. Doesn't hurt anybody. That was the big thing. If it doesn't hurt anybody, what's the big deal? But you're going 100 miles an hour down a country road, mm-hmm. you hit a pothole. It's not a speed-rated tire. Your tire blows out. The car doesn't know how to handle the change. You don't know how to handle the change. You're off the road, into the cornfield, flipped over, bunch of smoke, you're dead. Okay, well, so what? Well, there's a lot. The farmer sees the smoke over there. He has to come over to see what the mess is, look in the car and see your mangled body. He's scarred for life. He's lost the revenue because he's now not working. The cornfield's ruined because he's lost all of that product. Emergency people have to show up, time, money. Don't tell me that changes only affect you. It's not going to happen. There's always a ripple effect. There's always a chain reaction. And it's not always about you. This is kind of a big one, too, is that the change that you're going through might seem it's about you, especially if it's really overwhelming. But it's always, at least in part, for someone else as well. In some cases, someone might be looking at us to see how we've handled a particular change. A big one here is kids watching parents. Young kids say, I'm going to be like Dad. Why do they want to be like Dad? Because they've seen Dad in a changed situation. They've seen him handle himself. They've seen him calm. They've seen him collected. And they've seen him win. Because he's got the wisdom, experience, and patience to know how to deal with this that he has learned over the years. And in a church, for example, congregants look to their pastors, and they look to the more seasoned congregants in the congregation. When I first came into the church 37 years ago, that was a big one, because I really came from the other side of the tracks. I told you I was in a band, traveling. That's not really a Christian lifestyle. I didn't know how to act. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. So I watched the pastor like a hawk. There's Bible examples. Let's take Luke 10, for example. Let's switch over there. Luke 10, verse 30, about the Good Samaritan. Luke 10, verse 30. Jesus replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. At this point, I'm pretty sure the young guy in the ditch is pretty sure it's all about him. Mm-hmm. Verse 31. Now by chance, a priest was going down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and he bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and he gave them to the innkeeper, saying, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back. Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. Self-explanatory. It happened for our example. Christ even said, go and do according to the example of this change that occurred. Changes that might start out for you. And it might be a series of events that are done for somebody else. I'll explain this. Lots of scriptural examples about this. Things that can happen to you are done for. Not just example, but actually done for. Mary getting pregnant. That's an example of a change that occurred, not for her, but it started a whole change reaction. Change, series of changes and a chain reaction of things that were to change all of our lives. It was a much, much greater purpose. And then back to Abraham being told to hit the road. It said, you don't have to turn there. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Okay, this did both. By setting an example for us on how we should behave when change is about to happen. And it also triggered a chain reaction of a series of events that would influence the future of a lot of other nations. And if you could turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And verse 11. I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. Now these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So when change happens, what can we do about it? And to be able to do a quick review in your head of some basic principles that apply to us, it can make it a little bit easier. And of course, you won't be able to recall all the details, especially depending on the severity and the amount of trauma that is involved in the change in the event. And it can be pretty hard to engage your brain at that moment. But if you can remember even a few of them, if you can regain your composure and keep your wits about you, it can make a difference. So sort out, do a little mini triage whenever a change is happening. And the first one was one of the characteristics of speed. And in this case, how fast do I have to figure this out? When you're in a car accident, something has to be done now. Even if it's just pick up the phone, call your husband at the office to ask what you should do, recognizing, I don't know what's going on. I'm overwhelmed. It's a state of trauma. And right now, you need to make something happen. You need to make a decision. But if you get in a notice... in your paycheck that your company is going to sell next year, it's going to be a huge change, but you've got some time. So don't decide right now. Don't stress right now. Go home, talk about it with your family. Decide whether you need a career change, if you should move towns, or what you should do to take it on. So sort out how fast things are happening and how urgent a response is. And also recognize that some people are better at handling change than others. When I was going to college in Ontario, staying with Kim's parents. We had just moved from BC. I was a little bit beat up. We both were. We tried to make a couple of businesses work, and we were newly married, and we were trying to figure things out. So I went and I talked to a counselor to get a little bit of advice on how to do this. She was really helpful. But the premise was not psychology or anything like that in terms of Freudian. But what it was is just an evaluation of what's happened to you, what makes you who you are, and as a result, how are you going to react to things happening in your life? And a typical example is a child that was in a house and it burned down and they lost one or more family members. And they're scarred for life, no two ways about it. And this is a clinical example. It's used often. And they're in a room, somebody lights a match, they will jump. Their pupils will dilate. They will have a flight or flight reaction. It's not normal. It's not standard or anything, but there's something in their past and they can't change it. It's a mistake to think that you can change other people from these traumatic experiences. They're carved in stone. You have to work with them. No two ways about it. And as a result, some people will be better at handling traumatic events than others. It's part of our makeup, but it's also based on the baggage that we have as we get older. And as we get older, we have more of these things. We have more of these traumatic experiences in our life. And it makes it even harder to change. My mother, for example, when we would talk to her about moving into a care facility, not going to happen. She's got too many stories. She's got too many traumatic events in her past. And just the mere thought of it was absolutely terrifying to her. Never did happen. And some are really good at handling pressure when stuff's going on around them. And the problem with that is when you are one of those people and you see somebody freaking out because of the situation, you think, what is their problem? You know, this is simple. It's clear. What's going on? You have to evaluate what's going on. You have to figure out who the people are. Some people simply process change a lot faster than others, depending on their personality type and their abilities and their mind. So you have to evaluate this and you have to get the facts, because if you do something without getting the understanding, without getting the facts together, you can really end up in a pickle. If you could turn to Proverbs 18 and verse 13, please. Proverbs 18. In verse 13, and this is the New Living Translation, but it has the same concept as your New King James. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. Handing out advice in a changing situation can make you look like an idiot, and it can really cause a great deal of harm. If somebody is having trouble with change, if there's something else going on, don't tell them they're weird. Don't tell them they're wrong, because you could be the one that's wrong. They're dealing with it the only way they know how. The perspectives in their mind are true and accurate. It'll only make things worse if you tell them that. Relax. What's your problem? You're not seeing these obvious things. You have to look at things. How old are they? How young are they? Are they too old to change? Do they have too much baggage? Or in some cases, are they too young to know that it's going to be okay? When you get older, you realize a lot of change that happens has already happened, and we've got a bit of a loop going on in existence. And a lot of these things that seem really bad, like a bad haircut, you'll get past that. You'll sort it out. At the same time, when you're young, you might not recognize the dangers that are coming your way, too, and that can be a real problem. Do your best to calm down the situation. And there was a quote that I heard actually just on Doc Martin the other day. Ruth said, and she quoted, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, who is a very eminent English poet, literary critic, philosopher, and theologian, and he said, advice is like snow. The softer it falls, the longer it dwells upon, and the deeper it sinks into the mind. Mm-hmm. I really like that one. Mm-hmm. So if you come after somebody at that particular moment, you're trying to push your advice down their throat, and you want to do it loud and you want to do it fast, it's not going to happen. You have to wait for the situation to calm. You've got to do it like flakes of snow. And know that it simply takes time to assimilate change. Without anticipating that, you can make it worse. That's one of the key things in change, is how to make sure it doesn't at least escalate, how to make sure it doesn't get worse. So you have to look around at the dangers. If you see dripping gas, you know you have to do something about it. You have to be careful, though, not to get in over your head. And that could be a bit of a problem, too. Because sometimes we think we know a little bit more than we do. Sometimes we think because we've experienced a situation that is similar, it may not have the depth, it may not have the other things that are impacting it the way that you thought it might be, and you're simply, even though you've got the experience, you might be new at it, believe it or not. So you really have to take a step back and you have to perceive the way your advice and your guidance is being received. And if not, something else is going on. So be ready to do that, because again, it can escalate and you can make it worse. Avoid tantrums. And why I say that is because sometimes if you cut yourself, and especially if you're a child or if you're sick, you think that's license to do whatever you want, to behave any way you want. And that can really make things worse as well. There's a quote that simply says, just because your pain is understandable, it doesn't mean your behavior is acceptable. Mm-hmm. Recognize you have to have some self-discipline and you have to get control of yourself, if nothing else. And again, recognize you're simply going to get through this. It feels like you won't survive. The poor guy in the ditch probably thought that was the end. But in most cases, you'll get through. You'll have some scars, no two ways about it, mental and physical, but that's okay, because they are reminders and they are very valuable. What change does to us and how it can change us? They can access a part of us that seems buried. And that can be very valuable. That's something God uses frequently. And it can be random, depending on how random we think our lives are with God's control. But probably, and specifically in our calling, they are orchestrated by God. And it's time to deal with something we simply weren't aware of or that God wanted us to see. But it's not always a case of correcting us. And this can really bring us down if we think these changes are always because I'm a bad person. What have I done now? How have I caused this? And so on. It might be the opposite of that. Sometimes God wants us to know that we're actually doing well, that we have actually grown in some area that we didn't realize, and to see that all these changes and all these trials we've been through have not been in vain. If you could turn to Jeremiah 29, please, in verse 11, Jeremiah 29. I'll be reading from the NET version. In verse 11, it says, "For I know what I have planned for you, says the Lord. I have plans to prosper you, not to harm you. I have plans to give you a future filled with hope." I really like that one. Another thing that change can do to us is it exposes weakness. And it's not necessarily bad, again, because sometimes that weakness can form an integral part of us. And I use my mother as an example again. And she died just, 2 years ago or something like that? And that was a real experience for Kim and I. We learned a lot in a hurry, as you often do. And she was amazing. Her and I grew up together. My family imploded back in the 70s, and everybody moved away. And it was just Mum and I. And that was a period in Duncan when women had no say. They had no capability. Especially didn't buy real estate. It was very chauvinistic. But she rose above all this. She had to raise her son. She dug in. She got a job. It was a horrible job. It was really hard on him, but she did it. She managed to buy a condominium. She took really good care of me until I graduated from high school. She was a strong woman. Then she, in her senior years, at 84 or something, 83, she fell. It was really bad. And she broke her hip. She was in the hospital, pelvis, and she was in the hospital for 21 days. Finally, she went home. She had a walker, but that was when it really got tough for Kim and I because we're trying to help. It's so obvious to us how to do this. We wanted a special seat for the shower so she didn't fall. We tried to get people to come in to help her, and that was just too fearful as well. But she was determined she was going to walk again. Life was not over, and she was going to make this happen. And she, as I say, she was strong. She was determined. She had been through some stuff in her life. What she didn't know is that she was also very fragile in her mind. And part of her succeeding as an independent woman raising a son is that she had independence in her mind. She was not taking no for an answer. She was going to beat this thing. Physical was fine. She learned to walk again with a really odd limp and things like this, but she got that done. But she didn't recognize the impact it had on her as far as her self-esteem was concerned. And trying to get her to see past that or to make a change in spite of that was impossible. If it threatened her self-esteem or it made her look foolish or it was in any way humiliating, couldn't go near it. For the life of us, we never really did factor it in. We never really did get past it. And we factored it in, but we didn't sort it out. And we got professional help to come in from social services, and they helped us to find the language and the other things that could help in dealing with seniors. So when these changes happen, we've got to recognize who's involved and the scope of the change, and recognize the best you can do is ease everybody through it, because you might not be able to make it right again. And there's a little bit of a problem with young people in that they are pretty sure that they can handle anything. You see this on TV too much. It's almost a culture out there that young people, especially teenagers in movies, no problem, I can handle it. I can take care of myself. You don't know what it is. And boy, as you get older, you find out that it can be really something. You know no way you ever could have handled it. So to get past that non-recognition of what your limitations are can be very dangerous. But we find out part of the good things in us again, too. And one of the things that we learn in the church is endurance. In our calling, we don't have to deal with Spanish Inquisitions these days. Not like they did in the old days, not like the Waldensians and things like that. But we're here for the long haul. And it's a long haul. And you have a lot of trials, and it goes on for years and decades. And sometimes we're just flat out exhausted. And it takes an iron will. God's help is always there, especially in the desperate times, but a lot of it is just to grit your teeth, find that iron will within you, and a trial can help you to see that you had a little bit more than you thought you did, because after it all, we're still here. One of the big ones, too, is that we find out how much we need each other. And boy, we've really found that one out recently. When we're young, we're rocks. We don't need anybody. I can handle it. Again, the culture of the media is a little bit detrimental that way. And it doesn't take a lot of changes in our lives to realize that we aren't alone. We are absolutely dependent on other people. whether it's the physical help we need when we're in that accident and the emergency people show up, or whether it's just somebody to sit with us and talk with us and to help us figure out a traumatic event that we've gone through. And the thing about accidents, those kinds of changes, is that they can be really illustrative of just how fragile our lives and our existence are. And that's really good in a way, because it really creates the obvious contrast between now and the world tomorrow in God's world. And He's the epitome of stability. He is that rock. So we find out on one hand how shaky our foundation is, and we find out on the other hand how strong His foundation is. If you could turn to Ephesians 4 and verse 13, please. Ephesians 4, 13. Until we attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, some of these sayings, by the craftiness and the deceitful scheming, people saying, go for it, because they want to make a buck off you. But by speaking the truth in love, we are to grow in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. We learn through the process to recognize what is stable, and we learn to recognize that stability is God. And as we come up on the end of this, one of the things about change, too, is the complete opposite. And that is to recognize that there's an opposite side to that, which is to resist change. And to recognize when we're getting the bad advice and to resist changing. You don't have to turn there, but in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21, but test them all, hold on to what is good, reject every kind of evil, don't change, don't follow it. And be on the lookout for traps, because there are dangers that lurk there. In Proverbs 22, 3, I think we will go ahead and turn there, please. Proverbs 22, verse 3. The prudent person, this is the International Standard Version, the prudent person sees trouble ahead and hides, but the naive continue on and suffer the consequences. I like what the Aramaic Bible says about this. The Aramaic Bible actually has a lot of interesting things to say. A prudent one sees an evil man being scourged and is powerfully instructed, but fools pass by him and suffer the damage. And what's kind of neat about that is that it tells us not necessarily to avoid the pitfalls that we could get into. It's to recognize the pitfalls somebody else is going through in their change. I mean, it's a lot better, as you find out when you get older, to see somebody else going through something bad and to learn the lesson instead of you. If you see somebody getting thrown in jail because they got arrested for shoplifting, make a note to self. Don't shoplift. And this one's interesting. Avoid pressure from other people when they're just pushing you to do something. And this one is about David. If you could please turn to 2 Samuel, chapter 16, and verse 5. This one's kind of cool. 2 Samuel, chapter 16, verse 5. This is before David had assumed his throne as king. He knew he was going to be king, but it hadn't happened yet. In verse 5, now when David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. Coming from there, he came out cursing continuously as he came, verse 6. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. Also Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom your son. So now you are caught in your own evil, because you are a bloodthirsty man. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to David, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please, let me go over and take off his head. But the king said, What have I to do with you, the sons of Zariah? Let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who then shall say, why have you done so? David said, you're pushing me, it makes sense, I'm king. Boy, if there was a moment that your pride could get the best of you, that was it. And David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son who came from my own body seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite, let him alone and let him curse. For so the Lord has ordered him. And then in Esther, the book of Esther, chapter 2 and verse 5. So we got David. This guy's nobody. He's the son of nobody. Nothing's going to happen. I just wipe him out. What if he'd done that? Esther 2, verse 5. In Shushan, the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai. We all know the story of Mordecai and Esther. The son of Jer, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish of Benjamin. If David had succumbed to his pride, killed Shimei, we'd have no Mordecai. Boy, if there was ever a moment where it paid off to not do something stupid and rest assured in life, there's a lot of those. So getting back to God and Christ being the rock and the solid example of not changing. I'll just go through a few scriptures. You don't have to turn them. Because it's a really big deal that in the worst changes that we're going through, we can absolutely count on the guaranteed stability and unchangingness of God in Jesus Christ. And we know a lot of these scriptures. Hebrews 13, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. And James 1, all generous giving and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or the slightest hint of a change. In Malachi 3, for I am the Lord, I do not change. Therefore, you are not consumed, O sons of Jacob. We use the word trial a lot in the church. And what is a trial? It's a change. So if you substitute change for trial, there's a lot in the scriptures about the patience required during trials, about being happy during trials, and to learning from our trials. Okay, so what does all that mean for us? The sooner we wrap our heads around all this, the better, because change is going to be happening to us every single day and on an ongoing basis. And hopefully a little thought about some of these devices and understandings can make it a little bit easier. And we are never the same after a change happens, but that's kind of the point in terms of the bigger picture of who we are and who we must become when God is done with us. And we can never go back. You really want to say, man, if I could just do that over again. If I could have that moment over again, if I could fix that. It's not going to happen, so don't try. And this is a good thing. Why? Because then we can count on the new person that we have become. If we had a time machine, we could go back, change things, not be who we are, not so good. And where the problem arises on that is the example of Lucifer and Satan. Because God and we, each other, have to be able to count on all of us. Once we've changed into that thing, we never want to go back. And we have to be able to trust that we will never go back. So that when we're spirit beings, we know what's right, we know what's wrong, we know how to resist bad change and bad information, we can count on that for eternity. So even though you want to go back and change things, be glad you can't. You probably noticed I'm wearing my runners today. There's a couple of reasons for that. First one is I needed these shoes to be able to stand here for an hour plus. And these runners I keep as a reminder as well, because when I had them, in these runners, I ran a 10K. Last run that I went on, because I used to really enjoy running, was 10 kilometers. I had a standing heart rate of 47. I didn't know you could do that. Apparently that's good. I was really fit, but then things started to fall apart on me. My back fell apart, a few other things fell apart, and now I am permanently disabled. And there's no going back. It's never going to change. So I'm a tad bit familiar with change and the bad side of it, but also the upside of it. And so what could the upside be of not having physical ability anymore? Well, I was pretty dismal, I have to tell you, at that time. I was pretty down. In general, I didn't like mankind. I was ready to check out of this earth. Part of it is that because people are horrible. They're miserable. And I was working in the computer business at the time, and man, the pressures and the abuse that you take in that business, I have no idea. But then when this happened, all of a sudden I started limping a little bit and carrying a cane. I was amazed at how people transformed they'd look at me and then they'd do a double take and they'd see the king and their faces would soften. They opened doors for you. They were kind in ways that I never expected. I didn't know that was left. It sort of told me, okay, that's why God hasn't wiped us out. There's something. There's a seed in there. That means that there's still some good that's worth going through all this change and all these trials for. And especially in the church. Wow. To see my group come together and the support I received from them, that was awesome. It completely changed my conception of who we are, how we interrelate in those terms. It was fantastic. So would I go back? Would I want to fix it? Not on your life. Okay, so we're at the feast. And y'all are thinking, rightly so, I knew going down to the States for all those years would pay off for something. Especially at the feast, our calling is all about change. The feast is all about change. It's about going to a huge and a new and a better world. We stay in booths because it's about change. We get out of the illusion of stability of our homes. We're going through a lot of change, and hopefully y'all have changed just a little bit from hearing some of this. And you might deal with change just a little bit differently next time you have to deal with it. And remember that change is never bad for us as long as God is involved, and He is. If you could please turn to Isaiah 55, verse 9. Isaiah 55, verse 9. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, this is one scripture you probably knew was coming, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. Something way bigger than us going on, obviously. Change with God is always for our good. It's for a happier and better future. And as I mentioned earlier in Jeremiah 29, for I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord. Remember this one, thoughts of peace and not evil, to give you a future and a hope. So, change is a daily occurrence. Put God smack dab in the middle of it. That's a no-brainer, but still, it's good to hear it and it's good to be reminded of it. And we're going through some difficult trials in our little church here. We all know this. There's a lot that's happening. And our feast here this year is different because of it. It's richer. We have never been such a close-knit group. At times, we'd like things to be different, but they're not. And we struggle at times for clarity and perspective. But we know more than ever that God is working it out. Might take a while, might take a long while, but He's working it out. In 2 Corinthians, you don't have to turn there, it says, but for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. So remember, during what seems like nothing but change going on all around us, we can rely on that rock of ultimate stability, God's love and His mercy. Okay, two more batches of scriptures and then we'll wrap this up. Psalm 136, please. Psalm 136. And Psalm 136, verse 23. I'm reading from the ESV. It is He who remembered us in our low estate, for His steadfast love endures forever. And rescued us from our foes, for His steadfast love endures forever. Trying to make a point. Who gives food to all flesh, for His steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to God of heaven. Why? For His steadfast love endures forever. We're talking zero change. Know for a fact that it's all worth it. On that way to the final huge change in that moment when we are all made new. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 51. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. Boy, you knew this verse was coming. But we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. Finally, in verse 7, but thanks be to God who gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Have a great feast.